Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Boris Johnson has been dominating the headlines today for a variety of reasons. At the top of the list are his comments in the Mail on Sunday that the government's Brexit stance has wrapped a suicide vest around the British Constitution and handed the detonator to Michel Barnier. Andrew Marr asked the Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, if this was the right way for Johnson to conduct himself.
Well, I've just caught up with Boris Johnson's article this morning, and it's not news that he has a difference of opinion.
What do you make of
with
it?
He has a difference of opinion with the Prime Minister, and that's
the use of the term suicide bomb or suicide vest to describe the Prime Minister's approach? A lot of your colleagues are absolutely furious about that.
I think there are much better ways to articulate your differences, and I think it's a reminder, I think, for all of us in public policy, whichever political party we represent, to use measured language, because I think that's what the public want to see.
And in terms of measured language, it's the first time I've had a chance to ask you about this. Would you approve the description of women who wear the hijab or the niqab as looking like letterboxes?
It's not language I would use.
Do you think Boris Johnson has a language problem?
You have to get him on your programme and quiz him yourself.
Until then, do you think he's Islamophobic?
No, absolutely not. I don't. Not in the slightest. Boris Johnson is one person that I've known well over a number of years, and I think he loves all of Britain's communities, no matter where they come from.
And you look at all the stuff in today's papers. Do you think that he would be a fit leader of the Conservative Party in due course?
The Conservative Party is not looking for a leader because we are lucky to have a very good leader, and she's also the Prime Minister of this country, and she's doing a great job.
Javid also had a message for the Russian suspects involved in the Sergei and Yulia Skripal poisoning.
So on your screen, you've got Alexander Petrov and Ruslan Bashirov. Whatever their real names are. These are the aliases they used on officially issued Russian passports. Yeah. So it shows you the Russian state is involved in many levels in this assassination attempt. But as you say, the truth is...
We're not going to lift them in Red Square, are we?
Russia has no extradition treaty with the UK. It has a history of not extraditing its citizens. And the reality is we'll probably never see them in the UK. That's the reality of the Russians will probably never let them leave the Russian Federation. But if they ever do, let's be clear, we've got an arrest warrant out for them, a European arrest warrant, an Interpol red notice, that's an international arrest warrant. And if they ever step out the Russian Federation, Britain and its allies will get them and we will bring them to prosecution.
Polling carried out by the People's Vote campaign has shown heavy support from the membership of Britain's three largest trade unions for a second referendum vote. The TUC General Secretary, Frances O'Grady, joined Marr to outline where her organisation now stood.
Can I ask you, first of all, in general terms, what does the TUC want from the Brexit negotiations?
Well, we've been very clear from the start that we need a deal that protects jobs, protects workers' rights and avoids a hard border in Ireland. We've accepted the results. But we're very clear that the Prime Minister should make jobs, rights and no hard border in Northern Ireland at her priorities. This is about livelihoods at BMW, Airbus, Jag. People are worried about their futures. What the Prime Minister should be doing now is seeking an extension on Article 50 so that we don't crash out in March and we get the time to negotiate a deal that puts working people first for a change.
There's a poll in today's Observer on the front page of the three biggest trade unions showing overwhelming support for a second referendum or so-called people's vote. Is that going to become the TUC policy as well?
Well, I want to serve notice to the Prime Minister today that if we don't get the deal that working people need, then the TUC will be throwing our full weight behind a campaign for a popular vote so that people get a say on whether that deal is good enough or not. Because, you know, I'm a trade unionist. There is no way a trade unionist would negotiate a deal and not go back to their members. We know that people want to say that they don't trust politicians. They're really worried about what Brexit means for their jobs, their industries, their communities and their wage packets and prices going up too. So it's only right that people should get a say. So if the Prime Minister can't come back with a deal that meets our need, we'll be campaigning for a popular vote.
Chuka Amuna, a vocal critic of Jeremy Corbyn's leadership, has dealt his harshest words yet over the Labour Party's internal handling of anti-Semitism. After several weeks of turmoil, during which the party finally accepted the internationally accepted definition of anti-Semitism, Amunah told Sophie Ridge exactly how he felt about his party's current predicament.
Do you think that the Labour Party is effectively institutionally racist?
Yes, I do. If you look at the definition of institutional racism as outlined by Sir William McPherson in the McPherson Report, and the McPherson Inquiry produced the institutional racism definition, the Labour Party is beyond doubt for me that it's met it. It's very painful for me to say that. Part of the reason that I joined the Labour Party, my family started supporting the party, was because it was an anti-racist party. And I think the failure to deal with the racism that is anti-Semitism is particular and clearly is a problem. And, like, I mean, it's a sadness to listen to you talk about what has happened and transpired over the summer. Because we failed to deal with this issue properly, most recently, whether or not we adopt the International Holocaust Memorial Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism, which we should have done right at the beginning of the summer. Had we done that, we could have talked about the big issues where we had new information being exposed around climate change, around social care, around the fact that we're still seeing wages stagnate after the global financial crash. Those are the kinds of issues, in addition, of course, to Brexit, that we should have been talking about in the summer,
the not Labour anti-Semitism. Party would say that they have now adopted that definition. In Labour, it's just been talking, saying that they are going through any complaints that
you put to him the point that this has taken months and months and months and months, and there's still outstanding complaints. There have been reports, this week, that there have been threats of violence against members of parliament, which the Labour Party has known of, but has not told members of parliament, which is extraordinary. So the whole way that this issue is being dealt with has been clearly deficient, and the leadership have acknowledged that to be the case. And as you said, you're still talking about it right now.
I've got to ask you. Sure. If you think Labour is institutionally racist, why are you still in the party?
Because I want it to change. And look, there's institutional racism in many institutions in our country. And if you simply leave the field, as it were, instead of try and argue and see change through in an organisation, then I'm not sure you necessarily always make progress.
Amunah's words come amid a row where he urged Jeremy Corbyn to call off the dogs, as a series of moderate Labour MPs faced no confidence votes from their local memberships. When Ridge interviewed Labour Party Chairman Ian Lavery, she asked him what he thought of Amunah's intervention.
What's your message to Mr. Amunah?
Well, let me tell you, that is so disrespectful. It's so offensive to members of the Labour Party. Calling anybody a dog is absolutely outrageous in the extreme. Ichuka Umunah, of all people, should know that. And I hope that he takes this opportunity of apologising to those people who he's offended immensely. These are the people, who keep Ichuka Umunah and myself and other MPs in a job. These are the people who deliver leaflets. These are the people who speak to people on the doorstep. These are people who go out and rail hail or shine to ensure that we've got the best possible chance of winning an election. To denigrate them, to call them disrespectfully dogs, is absolutely outrageous. So, Chuka, be respectful to these people. These are the people who keep us in employment. These are the grassroots, the foot soldiers of our wonderful party.
And finally, the former Northern Ireland Secretary, James Brokenshire, has defended his successor, Karen Bradley, after she admitted that she had a very limited understanding of Northern Irish politics before taking up the post.
She said, very startling admission, about when she first got the job, "I didn't understand things like when elections are fought in Northern Ireland, people who are nationalists don't vote for unionist parties and vice versa." Is that startling admission or is it refreshing honesty? Were you a bit worried when you read that?
I think Karen Bradley is doing a fantastic job, and I should know, having done that role, sadly, before I had to stand down for illness. And she has come forward this week, I think, with a very clear plan on actually how the powers can continue to operate in this issue of uncertainty and instability in Northern Ireland, cutting salaries for the MLAs there, and actually trying to create this environment where we can get an executive. And I think what Karen was really talking about was the fact that when you spend time there, the depth of that feeling, the strength of view that people have, that's where you really feel that and see that when you spend that time there. And I think it is that sense of driving things forward is, you know, I've worked with Karen in the past. She is strong, she is determined, and that's why I think it is right that everyone gets behind her and actually gets on to the politicians in Northern Ireland to see that coming together, how an executive devolved government is what Northern Ireland needs to really get the growth, the opportunity that I saw again there when I was there 2 weeks ago.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffeehouse Shots podcast on the iTunes store, and you can get a great deal on the magazine with 12 issues for just £12 and a free limited edition Spectator moleskin notebook. Just visit spectator.co.uk/pod offer. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week.